that we, that, that are beyond a mile and a half currently, if we cut 20%, that's just a direct cut to our funding. We're going to have to take it out of instructional education, and we can't afford to do that. We're already looking at a $1.8 million budget deficit. So I urge you to keep those in, and you know, it's monies we need. What I want to concentrate on today, though, is, you know, just like everybody else come down here, we want money. I think what is important for people to know that across the state, when we're asking for new money in education, we're not asking for new money to add programs and to do new things and to do that. We need money to address the fixed cost increases that we're facing right now. I'm going to tell you about three. I've only got 2 minutes, so I'll tell you about three of them. I can tell you about a lot more, but property insurance. After the session closed last year, property insurance went sky high. We knew that because of 9/11 and the market, the way the market was, that insurance was going to increase. We didn't know it was going to increase to the point it did. For FY 2002, for Kodiak Allenboro School District, we paid $78,876 for property insurance. In 2003, we paid $282,000. It's a $207,000 increase. Market's projected to go to another 15 to 20% this year. At 15, that's a $42,000 increase. That's $250,000 in property insurance increases that we're facing, and by statute, we're required to do that. Health insurance. You know, the trend across the nation is 15%. At 15%, that's over $400,000 increase for our district. You know, the governor has recognized increased cost in his budget for the state employees. We need to be recognized the same cost. Fuel. You know, it's great that fuel, the price of fuel and oil is at where it's at right now for the revenue side of it, but on the expenditure side of it, it's not great for school districts. Last July of 2002, we were paying 87 cents a gallon for number one fuel. Today, I'm paying $1.64 for number one fuel. That's a 77 cent per increase per gallon. To run the Kodiak Allenboro School District for a year, we use 317,000 gallons in a regular year. You add those numbers up, and that's over $240,000 increase for fuel. That's only three areas I've talked about. You add those up, you're in the $900,000 area of fixed cost increases. We're not going out and adding new programs. We're trying to keep what we have. That's why we're looking at the $1.8 million deficit we have. $900,000 increase in those areas. Senate Bill 1 seeks to add $80 to the base student allocation value. We as a district would get about $320,000 out of that. And so that's why I'm here to say, is it justified to add money to education? We're asking you to add money just to keep the things we have. Even with that, what that $320,000 will do for us will mean that the cut list we have that equals $1.9 million will only have to go down to $1.6 million on it.
Can you wrap up, Dave?
You betcha. I guess what I'll end with is I'll take my finance director hat off and I'll put my dad hat on. Got three kids in the system. Okay. In Kodiak, the borough's at the cap. The borough can't give us any more money. There's no system set up for me as a father to pay for the education of my kids. I can come here and tell you we got an $1.8 million deficit and that I want you to give me more money. Well, I'm here telling you I'm willing to pay more money too. I make more money. My family makes more money from the permanent fund check that we get in October than I pay in property and sales tax in Kodiak, paid to live in the state. So give me an opportunity to pay for my kids' education. And whatever form you find that in, I'll pay you. Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Okay, next we have Suzanne Price.
My name is Suzanne Price. I'm the executive director at Fairbanks Community Mental Health Center, and I appreciate your time. I know that I come here every year as part of the Bridges campaign, and I know that consumers have come and spoke to you in the past and have this year as well. And I'd like to speak to the issue of community-based services from a different approach, and that is from a historic approach. A little more than 25 years ago, the leaders of our state did something so progressive and so new to the country that we didn't even realize it, and I don't think a lot of people do now, and that is that most places in the United States pay for their mental health services and other services to human services to the communities through county system, borough systems, state systems, this state set up a privatization system whereby those services were provided by nonprofit organizations. It was thought at the time, and it's still believed, that this is a much more inexpensive route to follow when providing services to the communities. Each nonprofit has a board of directors from their community, and these services are controlled at a community level. That was about 25 years ago in Alaska that that system was created. About 10 or 12 years ago, the state decided that was a grant system, that we could save money statewide by altering our system somewhat, cutting the grants significantly, and bringing in Medicaid billing. And this was done. Most of the nonprofits, especially in mental health, now bill Medicaid. Approximately half of our income comes from Medicaid and approximately half from grants now. The system has worked fairly well. It wasn't an even trade. Services were cut somewhat in the process because it now costs us to bill. We have to hire clerks to bill and those sorts of things. We have to have the technology to do the billing. Nonetheless, it's worked out fairly well. This year, you have a new approach on the block, and that is to refinance more of the Medicaid billing through federal sources. Our center was one of the first to have this happen. We entered into agreements last year, and I'm here to tell you that it has worked so far. We have no complaints about the system. There were three of us that were pilot sort of projects, and most of our money now comes through what's called a dish agreement. Some are called ProShare agreements. It's Medicaid refinancing. I'd like to say that I do agree with parts of the governor's budget that say, for instance, that we need to look at how we're spending money, not just that we're spending money. How are we creating it? Where's the revenue coming from? And how are we effectively and efficiently using the money that we're spending? From my perspective, we still need efficiencies, much more efficiencies. For instance, we are regulated and over-regulated by so many different agencies that I can't even begin to explain to you the sheer amounts of paperwork we deal with by so many different agencies in the state, licensing people, Medicaid audits, our own audits for our board of directors, state audits, oversight review committees, task forces. I mean, it's an endless number of different regulations and regulatory agencies that we must adhere to. And do you realize we have to pay people to handle all of this as well? And so does the state. Now, I'm not saying that I don't want to be accountable. Of course I want to be accountable. I want our organization to be accountable and to maintain the respect of the community in doing a good job. But we are also a business. We are a nonprofit corporation, and as such, we need to operate as a business. And I'd really like to encourage all of you to think about ways that we can create more efficiencies, not simply cutting services, but by becoming more efficient and reducing some of this overregulation.
Can you wrap up, Suzanne?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate
very
it.
Very good.
Get rid of some regulation. I like that. Eleanor Rose, Reggie, help me with this one.
You will.
She'll help.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for coming. State your name for the record and begin your
testimony. My name is Eleanor Rosoyak. I'm from Point Barrow, Alaska. I was born and raised in Point Barrow. I'm a full-blooded Inupiaq from the farthest north of Alaska. I'm the youngest of 11 in the family. I have 5 sisters. The oldest sister passed from lung cancer. I have 5 brothers. 2 oldest had passed on. I'm a single parent of 3. My oldest son, Payuk, is 18 and is in Eugene, Oregon Christian College. And my daughter, Avayak, is 16. She just received her national scholarship. She's in a high school. And my youngest daughter is Umanak. She's 13 and in middle school. My pop died from lung cancer back in 1993. And my mom is 86 years old today, still living. My parents were taking care of my grandma. Her body weighs down was paralyzed. My brother and sister took care of her by cooking, bathing, and doing laundry for her. I was 1 year old at the time when she passed on. There was also my elderly uncle, Lazarus Gunalo. my elderly aunt, my mom's blood sister, Effie Numnick, who had died when I was a teenager, and another elder named Eddie Edwardson, who was still living, but now lives in at Senior Center. My parents at my parents were like a homeless shelter for the homeless. My mom is 86 years old today. She's been having health problems from anxiety attacks and depression on and off, which is still ongoing. There could be a lot of reasons from her health problem. It might have something to do with her past problems or from missing her friends, relatives that had passed on. At times, she mentions the year 71 to go away. This might have something to do with something bad that might have happened. She's always seeing her psychiatrist in Barrow, which are very helpful, goes to see them every 2 weeks, which is good for her. She takes medication for her depression, high blood pressure, and bedtime sleeping pills. Me and my sisters and brothers take turns watching her by cooking, bathing, doing laundry, and cleaning up her house. She stays home every day in her bedroom. She raised 2 grandchildren since they were 5 and 7, now adults. And one of our brothers, First John, had died from sleeping over relatives' house fire. My eldest brother died back in the 90s from ice fishing alone, drowned in thin ice with a snow machine and sled. Papa died 3 years ago. He was in Navy. And my mom worked so many years from school district for elementary, middle, and high school. Mom and Pop would always take turns cooking breakfast for the family every morning. Then Mom would bring leftover lunch from work. They would always take turns cooking. She was always busy on her feet, always sewing parkas, mittens, booties, which we are doing now. And we had a dog team of 15. Me and my mom and Pop would always go fishing, gear load a sled, riverside up inland. He had recently built a small cabin years before he died. Today, I ask every one of you, please pray for your loved ones that are in need of help, mentally and physically. I work at the Arctic Women in Crisis. I am a counseling technician, and before that, I was working at the Senior Center as a public assistant. And I would like to thank you all, NAMI members and legislators, for sending me here to Juneau for this meeting. Thanks again.
Thank you, Rose. Eleanor Rose. Thank you very much. Next we have Edward Hotch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Edward Hotch. I'm a UAS student out at the college, and I'm here to say that I'm in opposition to the funding cuts for the college. Not very long ago, UAS became accredited college, and just this last year they put on a new wing on the library where they have new classrooms. And with these new classrooms, the enrollment has been going up slow but sure. And with this enrollment, it's going up because of the money that's going into the college and people want to come here. And when people come here, they add to the economy because of the money that they bring in. And if you give funding cuts to the college now, after putting in so much money, to me it'd be like a waste of money. Why build something and add on to the college when you don't want to continue to keep funding it? Because if you don't put the money into the college, students are not going to want to come here, because you have to have something to offer them, something to give them. This is a place that they want to go because they know that their credits are going to count somewhere, because the college is credited, and the things that they're being taught, they're going to be able to use somewhere else. And one of the things that this college has is a lot of adjunct teachers. With more money, they can hire teachers that they can keep on full time. So students will know what classes they're going to have, because they will have the teachers there to teach them. All of you know how important education is. If you didn't have education, you wouldn't be here representing anybody now, because no one would vote for you, because they would say, why would we want someone representing us that is not educated? It's a popularity vote won't get you in. It's the education that you have that puts you in the seats that you have now, which makes you have the power to make the decisions on education. All parts of education should be funded. So I would just like to say that the college is not trying to just go by itself. They've raised their tuition this year 10%, so students are actually paying to help keep it up. I would just, you know, really appreciate if you guys would keep the college funded, because you put so much money into it now, it'd be a waste of money if you just let it go. Thank you.
Edward, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming forward this morning. Next I have Peggy Cowan. Good morning, Peggy.
Good morning. Hello, I'm Peggy Cowan. I'm superintendent of schools of the Juneau School District, and I'm going to speak to education. And I wanted to thank the committee for your current attention to the Learning Opportunities Grants and the pupil transportation, and just remind the committee about things that you've heard before. I'll try to be brief. The bottom line is that any cut to funding in education is a cut to school programs and to services to students. We, as other districts that you've heard before me, have increased the costs, insurance, just to keep the doors open, insurance, workman's comp, retirement contributions, all of those things. And any additional cuts, we're not going to be able to cut those things, but we'll have to cut school programs. Just today, right before I came over here, I was in a meeting, and there's a new federal requirement that we have to provide transportation for homeless students back to their home schools, which I think is a wonderful idea, because if they move to a shelter, if they move in with relatives, they need to go back to the school, and it's good for kids. It's a federal requirement. We had budgeted it into our Title I funds, and I just learned right before that it's we have federal guidance. It's not legal to use those federal funds, so we're going to have to come up with some other funds to do that good service. So we need the funds. We can't afford cuts. The tuition students is something that this committee, I don't think, has addressed yet, and I want to explain a little bit about. These students are needy students. These are the ones that are non-resident students in care of the state or foster home that we receive funds for. These funds, these students receive a lot of supplemental services. They're often not served in under special ed programs because their diagnoses are emotional disturbances and not special ed. In extreme cases, we need these students become wards of the state. They're placed in out-of-state placements, and and those out-of-state placements turn to the district to pay for them. And the ones who stay in the district, again, receive a lot of help, both on mental support and counseling and academic support. If we don't get these funds, we will continue to serve these students because we need to and because we are required to. But we won't have these additional funds to help with it. And so it'll be the regular school program that, again, you know, takes the hit. And then finally, on the community side, I wanted to hit on two things. One is the school debt reimbursement. I was heartened as an educator to live in this state because of the positive response to Proposition C this last year. I think that was a statement by the voters of the state that they too think that that schools and buildings and whatever is important and a priority for the state. And certainly when we voted on that ballot proposition, expected the levels that were that was described at the time. And on the community side, I'd also like to point out municipal sharing, which I know is also has been proposed by the governor for cuts. The community needs these funds, and our community is a wonderful community. It funds has a tradition of funding as much as it can to education. It has increased since I got to the district by almost 10% in terms of the percent of the overall budget. And the effect of cutting municipal sharing will be that they can't, will have to possibly make cuts in the community support to education, so that'll just be another hit. So I want to thank you. You've clearly showed as a committee that you do prioritize education, but would encourage you to continue to look at those needs.
Peggy, thank you very much for coming over from the school district this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next we have Douglas Moore. Douglas, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for your attention. I appreciate it. My name is Doug Moore. I'm living in the valley, and I'm Wasilla, Matanuska Valley, and I'm recovering.
You gotta be careful what valley you say. There's a lot of valleys around anymore.
This, we're in Alaska. We have many valleys, the land of many valleys. I'm with the Bridges Campaign. I'm also past president of National Alliance for the Mentally Ill for an affiliate in Matanuska Valley. I'm also on the Crisis Intervention Team Task Force for training officers to help the mentally ill and the systems that help them in the single point of entry in Anchorage. And we've invited officers from around the state of Alaska. And Juno has participated in our training. I was in the newspaper with a group of officers and DOC people and that had graduated from one of our training, 40-hour trainings. I'm a highly functioning individual when I have the opportunity to recover. And from the SEAL grants, a wonderful opportunity has been given me to be a part of the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill and pass on mentoring to other people. It's empowered me to be able to go to speaking engagements around the state of Alaska in regards to dual diagnosis, which we are bringing the mental health and drug and alcohol together, which is wonderful. I'm looking forward to wise decisions in spending when it comes to empowering and collaborating with the consumers in the state of Alaska to do outreach. The monies have often gone into institutions where they haven't been able to necessarily assist people in recovery, but enable them to stay in their mental illness and in their drug and alcohol problems. Definitely an advocate and a promoter for people to move into the community. And the SEAL grant is monies that have helped us be empowered and go out and spread the news amongst ourselves, and that puts it back into the community. So anything that would promote the community to be able to rise up and teach and educate and support one another, I'm all for it. So I encourage the monies to be spent wisely. There is a growth amongst us that is just moving in great proportions, and Bridges is part of that, and so are other programs. I really appreciate your time.
Doug, thank you very much for coming forward this morning.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Okay, next we have Carl Rayborn. Rayborn?
Morning.
Carl, good morning. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. My name is Carl Rayburn. I'm a case manager for Fairbanks Community Mental Health. I'm here representing the agency as well as up here with the Bridges Campaign. Basically, I'm here advocating for the continuance of community-based support programs. One plan I'm speaking at first was I started listening to other people, you know, realized, well, you know, don't have much of a chance to get here from Fairbanks, so I thought I might as well put my 2 cents worth in. I've, at the position that I'm and there, I work at the ground level, getting our consumers out of, you know, jail or the hospital or whatever, and helping them rebuild their lives. And I look at the money for community-based support programs as more of an investment, kind of giving back to the community, you know, because once you know, we get them stabilized on their medications and help our consumers get their lives back together, you know, they're, you know, extremely high functioning, and they can give back to the community. And, you know, I kind of thought, you know, that's an investment, much like, I guess, you know, the positions that y'all got, I would assume y'all got them because y'all want to make a difference, and what's the best thing you can do to help out your state, you know, come here where everything's done. And I kind of feel it's the same way with the community-based support programs as far as giving back to the community. It's a very wise investment. You know, I've seen the wonderful differences, you know, the medication makes and our programs where we don't have to send our kids or our loved ones out of state for treatment. I've been in the business, I guess, about 10 years. I work with kids extremely intensively, and then I've been with adults for the last 5 years. And I cannot express enough the difference that having the all the support and everything you need in the community, whether it's Fairbanks, Anchorage, Juneau, or Nome, or wherever, you know, to have that family support right there with along with, you know, with your recovery, where you're seeing psychiatrists, therapists, or, you know, case managers like myself. And just wanted to emphasize the importance of, you know, that money is, you know, it's an investment, it's not an expense. But that's all I had to say, and thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Carl, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Hope everything's going well in Fairbanks. I don't have anybody else. Is there anybody else in the audience that hasn't spoken that would like to speak? Didn't write their name down on the list. There's one gentleman right here. You haven't spoken yet. Do you want to speak?
Are you speaking to me?
Yes.
Yes.
Say your name for the record, please.
Yes, sir.
My name is William Toyer. I'm in my second season as a school bus driver, and I've worked for both the Anchorage School District and their service contractor. First, I would like to let you know that I've found my coworkers to be conscientious, caring, and committed. Every day I work hard to meet and maintain their high level of service. I and my fellow drivers recognize in each of our passengers that literally the future is riding on our buses. Each student represents the dreams and aspirations of their parents, caregivers, and guardians, and we work together to safeguard that trust. Frequently, it is our service that allows a parent to go to their work, confident that their child will be secure and arrive safely to school and home again. We drivers and attendants never forget there are stakeholders in our service that are not present with us on our bus. These parents, grandparents, and others depend on our service as a vital link in their family transportation solution. Our service may be what allows a family to move effectively through their day. I believe that pupil transportation at the Anchorage School District is the safest mode of transport available to our students, and in addition, our service tangibly contributes to family cohesion. This secondary effect, family cohesion, is terribly important. Families today have many sources of stress, and our services assist families by smoothing their planning for the care of their children. Your support of pupil transportation will have a positive effect on our students and those caring for them. Your support will advance our students' prospects for a successful school experience. And finally, your support will contribute to the overall goal of maintaining healthy families in our communities. Thank you for your time.
William, thank you. See, that wasn't so bad.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Gotcha. Thank you. Anybody else that wants to testify that hasn't?
Morty.
Okay, would you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Derek Fighton.
Derek?
Born and raised in Fairbanks, Alaska.
How do you spell your last name, please?
F-Y-T-E-N.
F-Y-T-E-N. Okay, thank you.
And representing Fairbanks Community Mental Health Center. And my boss is boss's boss here, and couldn't let my coworkers show me up. So, am I done?
Your time's
already?
Not up. You're over.
One in four individuals experience a mental illness or a severely emotional disturbance in their life. It could be yours or my friends or family. I think our main mission down here with the Bridges campaign is to let the legislatures of the state think twice before they slash and hack away the funds for our quality of life of our friends and family. As case managers, Carl and I help reintegrate individuals who might have been hospitalized or in jail recently. And like he said, it's an investment and not expense. Our community support programs help put these people back to work and make the quality of life better. And I'm going to make it short and sweet. I know it's almost lunchtime, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
We got a long ways to go before lunch, but thank you very much for coming from the back of the room back there up here, because I know it's not easy to come testify. Anybody else? I think everybody else has spoken already. So with that, that's all we have here in Juneau, and we are going to take a break until 11:30, in which time we will take up the Matsu Valley, one of those valleys, the Delta Junction area, Tok, and Glen Allen. So members are free to take a little break, and we'll be back. While the public hearing for the House Finance Committee budget back in session, we are now moving to our areas of the Matsu Valley, Delta Junction, Tok, and Glen Allen. The same rules apply to the Legislative Information Office sites as applied to the Juneau public testimony. It's 2 minutes per person.
Choice.
And I ask that the testimony be held strictly to the subject matter at hand. No personal attacks or innuendos toward any legislators or the administration, just strictly to the issues at hand. Makes it much easier, and we will deal with the issues as presented. I would like to go now first to the Matsu LIO. And Matsu, are you on?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. The first person I have to testify is Noel Arakulean. I'm sure I screwed that up, but if there's a Noel in the audience, if he'd come forward to testify, I'd be very good.
Yes, Noel Arakulean Mills.
Okay. If you want to begin your testimony, that would be wonderful.
Yes, I am a representative of Access Alaska in the Matsu Valley, an independent living center, and I wanted to speak about what independent living is. Independent living is not merely a service that one gets from a center for independent living. Independent living is no less than a philosophy of life that says that people with disabilities should be afforded the same rights and responsibilities, a citizenship as everyone else in society, equal opportunities, self-determination, self-respect. We complement existing services in the community. Our staff members, including myself, are individuals with disabilities who we are working taxpayers. Like any great philosophy, independent living has had its founders. Independent living history is full of people like Ed Roberts, a man paralyzed from the neck down by polio, who, having been told that he would never be employable, went on to become the head of California's Vocational Rehabilitation Agency and also founded the first Center for Independent Living in Berkeley, California. And then there's Judy Heumann, who also has post-polio quadriplegia and is now the current head of the Office of Special Education and Rehabilitation Services Division of the Federal Department of Education. We're qualified and competent persons with disabilities. We function as staff members and act as role models for consumers with disabilities, stressing that barriers can and will be overcome. Independent living takes its cues from the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s. The independent living movement has revolutionized the way people with disabilities are perceived and the way they perceive themselves. Over the years, several laws protecting the rights of persons with disabilities have been passed, thanks to the untiring efforts and advocates. Okay. I would just like to state that proposing cuts for independent living is an outrage, unfathomable, unreasonable, and unscrupulous.
Okay, Noel, are you completed with your testimony? Thank you very much. Next, I have Bob Doyle. Bob Doyle.
Yeah, my name is Bob Doyle. I'm the chief school administrator of the Matanuska Susitna Borough School District and representing approximately 14,000 students. I want to thank the committee for restoring and the funding for learning opportunity grants, and we support those learning opportunity grants and the ability to do student interventions with our student body. And it also allows us to work towards the requirements under No Child Left Behind. So we're appreciative and supportive of that restoration and funding. We also are supportive and appreciative of the restoration for pupil transportation to fund it at 100%. And as an added note, we are doing whatever we possibly can to reduce the cost of pupil transportation. We have already talked to our school board last night about having middle school students and high school students ride the same bus, which would reduce the cost to the state by about $400,000. And while we're trying to do this, we still would like to have 100% reimbursement of the cost, but we are doing whatever we possibly can do to reduce the cost because we understand the fiscal constraints that the state faces. Other than that, those are the biggest notes that we have for the Finance Committee. We are opposed to implementing the area cost differential. We've talked to the education committees about that concern. And that would probably cover the two biggest points that I have for today. So we just appreciate and support the committee restoring those funds.
Bob, I appreciate the your comments and you're willing to address the issues, especially the attempt at looking at some cost savings and reductions. That helps us a lot, and it also goes to show that working together we can solve a lot of these problems rather than nipping at each other. So, Bob, I appreciate your testimony very much. Now I'm going to move on to Mike something. I can't, it's a name with a ski at the end, and I don't want to try to pronounce it. So, Mike, if you're there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first part of that hard-to-pronounce name is Malevsky. It's Mike Malevsky, and I'm president of the school board here in Mat-Su.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Go ahead and begin your testimony.
Yes, sir. My interest is not to present additional testimony in the form that Mr. Doyle has, because he's looked at the specifics and details of what we're interested in. I would just like to add a comment or two regarding the purpose we have in providing education in the state and in the valley. Our interest, the school board's interest, is to do what the community needs to have done, provide an educational system that will meet the needs of students. I believe that the dialogue that we have with the legislature each year allows us to make sure that we are clear about what our intentions be. One of the difficulties when we talk about adding or deducting monies without retaining clear in our minds what it is that we're about is that we're talking about dollars and not the purposes of those dollars. So I'm just advocating for being clear when we have additional requirements, for example, that come to us from the state or the federal government, that those requirements are going to be ones that we can see clearly as supporting our educational purpose, and then work on ways to fund those additional requirements, because at the present time, we are pretty lean in our operation. And that's the only statement that I'd like to make at this time. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Mike, I appreciate it very much. Thank you very much. I'm going to move from the Mat-Su LIO for a minute and go to the Delta Junction LIO. Delta, are you on?
Yes, we are.
Okay, is Dan Beck there, please?
Yes, Representative Harris. My name is Dan Beck, and I'm superintendent of schools in the Delta Greeley School District. Thanks for this opportunity to testify today. I'm glad I have the opportunity to testify early in your hearing process, because the message you're probably going to receive over the next 2 days may become redundant. I think from the educational community, we want to thank the legislature for not taking actions to minimize the cuts in funding. That's by restoring law grants and those kinds of things. But all school districts across the state are facing the same challenges. We've all stepped up to the plate to face the challenges of school improvement and accountability. Funding for education is taking a tremendous toll. Inflation, property and liability, insurance increases, and just the everyday cost to do business are causing increases in pupil-teacher ratios, reduced course offerings, reduction in student activities, and cutbacks to all pupil support services. Flat funding or underfunding will continue us down this dangerous path we are headed towards. Funding people take transportation at current year levels will cause proration in FY04. I think the estimate I had heard was about 7% increase is what the department was looking at, but you'd have to ask them for that data. This may move more districts below that 70% instructional level. Reductions in debt reimbursement is going to put an additional strain on local contributions to schools for the organized areas of the state. Looking at what those impacts are on a local level, we're receiving over $300 less per ADM than we received in FY99. We can't survive another year of underfunding. Please, if you can, make good on your promises in the campaign of 2002 to make education your top priority. Thank you for this opportunity.
Dan, thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate it. Let's go back to the... Do not want to testify? Okay, let's go back to the Mat-Su Valley LIO. And next, I believe, is Deborah Dickey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. This is Judy Crossroad, moderator. Ms. Dickey does not wish to testify at this time. The one and only person we have left to testify is Kevin Curtis.
Okay, and Kim Floyd is not there then?
She's here, but she doesn't wish to speak. Her thoughts have been expressed by the other speakers.
Okay, very good. Kevin Curtis, then.
Yes, thank you. My name is Kevin Curtis, and I'd like to speak to you on two issues. The first is the continued operation of the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation. And the reason I'm speaking in favor of the continued operation of ASTF is that personally, I know that they have been one of the staunchest and longest supporting members of the forest products industry in the state. And were it not for ASDF funding, a lot of valuable work in the forest products industry in the state would never have gotten funded. They don't do a good job maybe of making sure that everybody hears about a lot of the good work that they do, but if the forest products industry is important to the state, then ASDF has played and can continue to play an important role in that industry. The second issue that I'd like to speak to briefly is the forest products industry. We are in a position in this state where the forest products industry is teetering on the edge of extinction. If we're going to protect endangered species, our forest products industry should be on that list right now. I'd like to urge you all to think about funding initiatives in the forest products industry that will allow Alaska to participate in the 21st century forest products industry. I think there's work underway in Ketchikan now at the Ketchikan Technology Center that's providing very promising indications for the future of the forest products industry if we still have one left at the time that those results are published. Please keep the forest products industry in mind when you're in your general funding program.
Kevin, thank you for taking the time to come out this morning and testify. I appreciate it very much. Is there anybody else at the Matsu LIO?
Yes, Mr. Chairperson, we have Linda Menard.
Linda Menard. Okay, Linda, if you would come forward and give your testimony, please.
Thank you. My name is Linda Menard, and I'm here to just remind the legislators, especially at finance, that we do have some of the highest test scores in the state, and I want to thank you for your willingness to serve, but if you can at all help us with our financial problems over here in our district, these cuts to transportation certainly will result in a huge impact to our school district. We met last night, and we're very supportive of the budget crisis here in the state, but we also have produced for you some pretty grand students, and they are continually winning national awards. And I concur with the last speaker on whatever programs you can help us with the aid. It's very important that we go forward and not continually sliding backwards. So if there's any way at all we can look to you for funding, we're certainly going to try to do our part to be frugal and be good stewards of the state funding money that's provided. Thank you.
Linda, thank you very much. I think as a long-term Alaskan, you understand that it's going to take all of us working together to resolve some of the issues that we have in the state, so I look forward to working with you as well. Is there anybody else at the Matsu LIO?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's move along to the Glen Allen Legislative Information Office, and I understand there's one person in Glen Allen, Jeff Lansing, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Jeff, would you proceed with your testimony?
My name is Jeff Lansing. I'm a school counselor with the Copper River School District, and I'm here today to testify on mental health issues. And my testimony revolves around the fact that many, 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 many districts around the state of Alaska do not have elementary school counselors. At this point, I work under a federal grant, the Elementary Counseling Demonstration Grant, which provides elementary counselors in this district. This grant runs out at the end of this year. As a school counselor, I deal with many issues that these children need to work through in order for them to succeed. The No Child Left Behind Act requires that these children be allowed to give them the opportunity to succeed. Without school counselors, that is impossible. I deal with family incest. I deal with physical sexual abuse. I deal with severe trauma in the homes. You have alcohol, drug addictions in the homes and in the communities. Many of my children, not most, but have fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. These children are at most risk for future prison time. If we don't deal with it at the elementary level, it will continue to be a problem. It will be a drain on the resources. So what I would ask is that these committees think about funding school counselors in the elementary schools. My second issue revolves around licensed professional counselors. I don't know if you're aware that licensed professional counselors cannot get reimbursed by Medicaid. I would love to stay in this area and be a private practitioner. There is no way I can do that when I cannot serve the people of this valley. Most of them rely on Medicaid to get mental health services. As an LPC, I cannot do that. Licensed clinical social workers can be reimbursed. Psychologists can be reimbursed. But their lobbies are a lot stronger than licensed professional counselors. So I would ask that you look at school counseling. I know funding is tight, but, you know, what can you do? That's all I have to say.
Jeff, thank you very much for coming out today. How's everything in Glen Allen?
Well, I was late getting here because I had to coax a student out of her locker. She had barred herself in her locker, wouldn't come out. Teachers don't have time to deal with these types of issues. I won't be here next year if this is the case.
Okay. Is the sun out in Glen Allen today, though?
The sun is out.
Beautiful, beautiful. Jeff, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Is there anybody else in Glen Allen?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. How about in Tolk? Is there anybody on in Tolk? No, nothing from Tolk. Is there anybody else at the Mat-Su LIO? Anybody else in Delta?
Yes, sir. Excuse me, Mr. Chairperson. This is Mat-Su. We do have one person that would like to speak at this time.
Okay, very good. Would you would the person come forward, state their name, and spell it for us if it's a difficult name?
I'm actually on the list. I had opted to hold off speaking. My name is Debbie Dickey.
Okay, all right. Deborah, go ahead, please.
Thank you. I just want to express concerns about the university funding being cut. I understand where everybody's coming from. I know that, you know, we've built new programs to try to meet the community needs. Part of these programs, we have term faculty in them. If we don't receive future funding, there's a good possibility that we won't be able to continue offering a lot of these programs that, you know, the state and our accreditation teams have required us and we've wanted to build anyway. But we are meeting community needs. I think education is wrong area to trim, and we are one of the most cost-effective units in the university system. I just hope you continue to fund education, and we would appreciate that. Thanks.
Deborah, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming out today to testify. Hope everything's going all right in the Mat Valley.
Going fairly well, thanks.
Thank you. Is there anybody at any one of our four sites? Anybody else in Mat-Su?
No, Mr. Chairperson.
Okay, anybody in Delta Junction?
No, sir.
Is there anybody in Tolk? Or Glen Allen?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. And I think they were supposed to give us half an hour notice if, in fact, they were going to be there. So with that, we're going to close the testimony in those areas. I appreciate everybody who has come out and testified today. Next, we will recess the public hearing until 1:30, at which time we will take up Kodiak, Bethel, Kotzebue. Representative Jewell is going to be listening for all of his constituents in Kotzebue and Barrow, as we all will. So with that, we will stand in recess until 1:30. Hey, are we back on the air? I believe we're on. We're back at the House Finance Committee review of the budget, the operating budget. And now we have the communities of Kodiak, Bethel, Kotzebue, and Barrow. We're going to start first with Kodiak. Kodiak, are you on the air?
We are, sir.
Kodiak is on the air. Do I have a Don Roberts?
Don, yes, sir.
Don, introduce yourself and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you. My name is Don Roberts. I live at 264 Lily Drive, apartment C2 in Kodiak. Thank you for this opportunity. Before you declare a crisis and broadcast the budget, perhaps you should see if you're getting what you're paying for. Here in Kodiak, for example, a high school graduate is paid $60,000 plus benefits to be the director of the mental health center. Additionally, the psychiatrist is paid $122,000 for part-time work. You're paying for a full-course meal and getting a box lunch without the cookie. Here's a cooker. The hospital splits its profits with the borough. From 1999 to 2002, the borough received almost $1.5 million as a share of the profits. So why is a nonprofit corporation distributing its profits? Don't ask me, ask Providence. After all, only Providence knows. I'll agree that a corporation has a right to make a profit, but a tax-exempt organization is limited as to what it can do with those profits. IRS Revenue Ruling 69545 states that a tax-exempt hospital surplus funds are to be used, quote, to improve the quality of patient care, expand its facilities, and advance its medical training, education, and research programs. I suggest that distributing the profits does not qualify as any of these. The ruling also calls for a local governing board, which we don't have, but I won't mention that. If you want to see the effective use of funds, you should look at independent living centers. A dollar invested in independent living services will save you more than a dollar, which will pay more than a dollar back. You might save and reduce health care expenses, or you might get it back when somebody returns to work. Either way, an investment in independent living is a far greater prospect with greater returns and with least risk. With that, I encourage you to fully fund independent living. Thank you.
Don, is that the end of your testimony?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for coming out today in Kodiak. I'm going to go to the second person in Kodiak right now, and that's going to be Pat Carlson. Pat Carlson, are you there?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Pat Carlson. I'm the Kodiak Island Borough Manager, and I just wanted to touch on a couple of items today. I don't think I'm going to belabor all of the various issues that we put for you, I think, from other folks, but I did want to touch on a concern I had regarding the proposed reduction in the revenue sharing program. And it's really not on behalf of the borough. I mean, in effect, if you look at the distribution of those revenues as a percent of budgets throughout the state, you're going to find an anomaly where for boroughs or unified governments, it's actually a fairly small amount. It used to be expensive over $1 million. It's now down around $100,000. But the point I'd make is that in terms of our ability to absorb that, it's not easy. We can do it. But I'm really concerned about our small villages. We have many of these communities that are teetering on fiscal bankruptcy, and the requirements of being a municipality are not simple for them, and the auditing requirements and the other issues and just the general day-to-day government is costly for them. And you'll find, I think, on review of all communities below 1,000, that those revenues represent at least 20%, and in many cases, much over 50% of their local revenue. Some people make the comment, well, they can tax themselves. I think that varies from community to community, and it's not that simple to just say that that's the option, because in many cases there is no revenues there. So it really gets down to a fundamental issue. Does the state of Alaska want to preserve the strength of small municipalities in the state of Alaska? And if they do, then you need to really focus, if you're going to move forward with that cut, ensure that there's a base amount or a floor to ensure that those folks receive at least the same relative amount as they have in recent years. The other thing I want to just touch base on real quick is, there's been a lot of hearings here lately on coastal management, some of the other issues regarding streamlining of government, and I would just ask you to focus on ensuring that there's adequate information and flow and efficiencies between local government and the state of Alaska, because we can all do the job a lot cheaper if we can work together and find ways to do that better. I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Okay. Patrick, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming out today. I'm going to move now to Kotzebue, and is Kotzebue online?
Yes, we are.
Very good. How's everything in Kotzebue today?
Very fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Beautiful. Well, Representative Jewell is here listening to your comments, and so I want to make sure that we get Kotzebue online here now. The first person I have is Diane Schaefer. Is that correct? Diane, if you'd introduce yourself and continue with your testimony.
Okay, I'm Diane Schaefer. I was born and raised here in Kotzebue. My box number is 837. Thank you for this opportunity. I am testifying on behalf of SB 158, the longevity bonus. I'd like to keep it. My grandfather relies on it heavily. He lives at CAP, and signing that piece of paper once a month is more than enough. Oh, HB 158, sorry. It's all he can handle, really. If you guys cut it, then it'd be hard. He would be able to apply for the assistance that they say that they can get. But please keep the longevity bonus as it is. I'm also testifying on behalf of the Labor and Workforce Development, the 10% cut for the adult basic education. As the school system continues to teach to the test, we're going to be losing more and more students. So it's going to be fall under the adult basic education to get students basically educated. So please reconsider that 10% cut in the adult basic education. Thank you.
Diane, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Appreciate it. Let me go next to Valerie Romaine.
My name is Valerie Romaine, and I'm calling on behalf of the Northwest Arctic Borough. And the Northwest Arctic Borough appreciates and supports the restoration of House Bill 158 regarding the longevity bonus, because when we called out to the communities, they told us, a lot of them told us that they used it to pay for bills, utility bills, and housing, and we appreciate you restoring that money. And then the other one is Safe Communities. The Northwest Arctic Borough opposes the cuts, or the proposed cuts in state revenue sharing and Safe Communities, because a loss of $187,000 is a lot of money too. That money impacts our borough residents, and we'd appreciate it if you didn't do the 25% cut. Thank you.
Okay, Valerie, thank you very much for coming out today. I appreciate it, and your testimony will be well noted. Next is Hannah Loon. Hannah Loon.
Good afternoon, Chairman Harris and members of the House Finance Committee. Thank you for giving me this time to do my testimony. My name is Hannah Loon. My P.O. box number is 48, Kotzebue, Alaska. I also live in Selwick, a population of 800 people. I am in support of Senate Bill 158, longevity bonus. I plead and ask you that the longevity bonus that the elders get each monthly, these are the, it meets their basic needs for water and sewer, electricity, heat, gas, and ammunition. So I ask the committee to keep that longevity bonus for our elders, because they've lived here longer than we do, and they greatly deserve that. I also oppose the cut for power cost equalization, especially for those of residents that live in the coal areas. Due to the lack of employment in the rural communities, their lives will be endangered when their electricity gets cut off, because they couldn't afford to pay the full amount. And we all benefit from the program. I also oppose the labor and workforce development, especially with the Kotzebue Tech Center. It allows the students to be close to home and yet do their subsistence activities and still at the same time continue on with their education. And also I oppose ABE, the reduction of ABE and Safe Communities. Thank you very much.
Hannah, thank you very much for coming out today. I appreciate it, and hope everything's going well in Kotzebue. I'm going to move now to Barrow for a minute. Is Barrow online today? Barrow, are you there?
Yes. Go ahead, George.
George Oman. George, are you there?
Yes, George Oman. I'm here for myself, although I'm with the assembly, the National Board Assembly, but I do have the same concern that they expressed, that they say revenue sharing. I think that should be, especially it affects our smaller villages real bad. And also the longevity that the elders do need to bend on that. I know they do up here. They need that for themselves and what they can benefit from it. Also with our roads, but mostly with our dust controls in our, up here we have a lot of dust in the summertime, and it affects our elders and the ones that do have problems with their breathing. and that's all I have. Thank you.
George, that was quick. Thank you very much. Now, is Jim Vonderstrass there?
Vonderstrass.
Vonderstrass, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thanks for this opportunity to testify today. I actually was here to testify against Senate Bill 71, where they're limiting the road enhancement to 10%. I don't know if that's part of this issue, but being a former mayor of Barrow, I would like to also speak to the revenue sharing reduction. I think it's very important that the local governments get a chance to decide where that money is spent, because I think it's a well-known fact that the constituents of our state and nationwide actually trust their local government to make those expenditures, and it's partly because they get a chance to see them on a daily basis. So I think it's very important that we keep the role of local government in expending revenues for the betterment of the community. And I appreciate the chance to testify. Thank you.
Well, Jim, very good. Thank you very much, and congratulations on your time as mayor, and hope everything's going well for you up there in Barrow. Next,
I got a great mayor now. Yeah.
Okay. Let's move along then to Bethel. Do I have a Phil Gutleben, or however you say that? Phil, are you there?
Yes, I am. It's Gutleben.
Gutleben.
My name is... go ahead.
And go ahead, Phil, and begin your testimony.
My name is Phil Gutleben, and I'm the business manager for the Lower Kuskokwim School District. And thank you for the opportunity for testifying. I would like to present the following 4 points on behalf of our school district. One, flat funding of the foundation formula and reduction in the learning opportunity grant will not even sustain existing education programs. To be in compliance with NCLB, the state's educational resources need to be both increased to $4,500 as a base allocation as well as inflation-proofed. Two, forward funding of education is needed for districts to do long-range planning in order to maximize the use of available resources. Three, by reducing funding of health and social services programs that impact families and children, an additional burden is placed on the educational system. And four, additional revenue needed to support increases in funding for education and health and social services could be obtained by one, a sliding scale income tax, two, a restructuring of the permanent fund distribution geared to meet the basic needs of families and children, for example, utility, food, and clothing expenses, and the need for subsistence activities, and finally, three, the establishment of an educational endowment fund. I also had a comment as an individual, irrespective of the school district, if I could switch hats if we have a moment.
Sure.
Okay. Anyhow, this is Phil Gutleben again. I'm representing myself at this point. I'm a relative new Alaskan and resident of Barrow. I also happen to be a registered Republican. I have a 30-year background in engineering, cost accounting, corporate auditing, and high school science teaching. I've also been a foster and adoptive parent. I support much of what Governor Murkowski is trying to do to support his streamlining of government. I especially favor his development proposals. However, I strongly believe in the importance of fully supporting education. After all, our youth are the future of our state and our country. So thank you for testifying on both the school districts and my own behalf.
Phil, thank you very much for coming out today, and I think we all share your concern over the funding of education, and we're certainly going to do everything we can to make sure the students of Alaska, the teachers of Alaska, are taken care of as best we can. Okay. Joanna Williams.
Yes. My name is Joanna Williams, and I'm from Bethel, Alaska. I'm originally from Quitlock, and I'm the STAR Grant Coordinator at Bethel Community Services, and I work closely with the Developmental Disabilities Program. And cutting the budget with the Developmental Disabilities Program will greatly impact all our children and adults with developmental disabilities in Bethel and the Bethel area. And I feel like with my job, I identify a lot of, you know, children and adults who may qualify for developmental disabilities. But if the services are cut, what are we going to do? Am I going to say to them, guess what, you're eligible, but there's no services available to you? And that's my greatest concern, is cutting the services for, you know, the children and adults with developmental disabilities. And I also work with, or the
vocational rehabilitation is also one of our greatest resources here in Bethel for our young adults who like to work. And cutting that service as well will, you know, definitely impact our young adults with developmental disabilities.
Okay, Joanna, is that it, Joanna?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much for coming out today. Is there anybody else in Bethel at this point in time that wishes to testify?
No, that's all we have, Chair.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. Now what I'd like to do is go to... I'd like to go back to Kotzebue for just a minute and see if my friend Walter Sampson... Walter, are you there?
Yes, good afternoon.
How are you, Walter?
How are you, Walter? Fine, thank you. Thank you very much for the time. Good afternoon, Mr. Grupto.
There you go.
First of all, I want to thank the Finance Committee for giving us an opportunity to voice our concerns in regards to the state budget. Certainly, the budget cuts that are being made are certainly going to have some drastic impact on the rural communities. I think what the state of Alaska needs to look at is in streamlining state government before any budget cuts are done at the rural level. Cost of living within the rural communities are high. I'll give you some examples in regards to some of the costs that the villages have to pay for. Example is fuel costs in Amber, Alaska, just 120 miles east of Kotzebue. Heating fuel is $3.95 a gallon. Gas is $4.05 a gallon. Here in Kotzebue, it's not bad. Kotzebue, heating cost per gallon is $2.07 a gallon. Gasoline is $4.25 a gallon. In another community, I will go back, go over into the PCE program. First of all, I want to again thank you for the support of the PCE program that the government, the state government has given us. Certainly it's something that we should appreciate. Too often we complain about not getting this and that. But even though we've got some cuts on PCE program, we certainly appreciate your support. An example of average cost of usage of per kilowatt hour, Norvik residential, average 503 kilowatt hours with PCE, it's $121.44. Without PCE, it's $246.39. In low tech, it's 540 kilowatts hours used average. With PCE, it's $155.20. Without PCE, $316.80. These are some of the examples that I'm giving you, hoping that there would be no drastic cuts on programs within the communities. Thank you very much.
Walter, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Is Lincoln Saito there?
Yes, I am.
Lincoln, go ahead and present your testimony, please.
Thank you. I'm Lincoln Saito, and I'm representing the university. I live at 1021 Caribou Street, right down from Reggie. And I just want to, I would like the House to support the governor's 5% increase for the university. The university really has been an economic engine for the state. One of the examples that is threatened if you flatline the university's budget with the increasing health benefits for the largest employer in the state is the human resources. I'm sorry, the Rural Human Services Program. We have just established it out here in Kotzebue, and what we have now is 15 students in the alcohol counseling program going through. They've just finished their fourth session. Previous to working for the university here in Kotzebue, I worked for Manilik Association and Human Resources, and we had a very difficult time having our alcohol positions filled. Part of that reason was because people had to leave their families and their responsibilities and go and live in Fairbanks for 3 weeks. It's been the week weekends and spend the evenings without any responsibilities, not being able to take care of the kids, not being able to pack water, not being able to pack wood, not being able to do repairs on their house and all those other kinds of things. They had to just sit there waiting for the professors and the courses to continue. By bringing it here to Kotzebue, we've been able to do a tremendous amount of things and increase our students. Part of the reason we're able to do this is because we have the Tech Center. The Tech Center is extremely important for our partnership at the university. So I want you to support the governor's budget and keep the Tech Center in the budget. Thank you very much.
Lincoln, thank you very much. Is Roger Wright there by any chance? Roger, are you on the off-net there in Kotzebue?
Yes, hello. Could you hear me?
Yes, sir.
This is Roger Wright, Jr. I'm the founding director of Arctic Access, which is an independent living center in Kotzebue. We've been in business for 10 years now, and we serve Nome and the Kotzebue regions. And we are against the cuts for the $619,000 state independent living funds because it will shut down Arctic Access because we only get state funds and it would affect the entire region of Northwest Alaska without doing the four-court services, which is advocacy, information and referral, peer counseling and independent living training. And could mean less PCA services or independent living services for the Northwest Alaska. And I just wanted to tell you I'm opposed to the cuts. That's it. Thank you very much.
Roger, thank you. Is Annette Richards there by any chance?
Yes, this is Annette Richards. I'm calling from Kotzebue. I'm the mother of a... my daughter is special handicapped, but I'm letting you know I'm against the cuts for funding for the Manilok Association Developmental Disability Program. Manilok DDP program assists families with case management, advocacy, respect, and access to other services. Although we rely on friends, family, school, and community, the developmental disability services are a vital part of the care and support for my daughter and others. Without the knowledge of knowing that the services are available, needed, we would feel overwhelmed. It is nice to know that there are services that are client-oriented and supports what our family or the people of the region needs. I'm also on the board for Arctic Access, and they do a lot of services up here for people with disabilities, adults. They work with the elders, they work with the public, and try to make them aware of the services that can be provided for those that are in need. So I'm calling in support as a parent and as a board member. Thank you.
Annette, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Is there anybody else in Kotzebue that's either at the LIO or off net?
That's all in Kotzebue here at the LIO. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay, now we're going to go back to Kodiak. And is Mark Buckley there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead, Mark.
Yes, my name is Mark Buckley. I'm the managing partner of Digital Observer, LLC, based here in Kodiak. We are a high technology company that seeks to develop technology that answers problems that are facing the commercial fishing industry and the seafood processing industries. And I'm here to speak in favor of the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation and in opposition to the governor's proposal to zero out the foundation and to take the foundation's remaining endowment and just dump that into the general fund for basically consumption this year. I'd like to point out that for the 14 years the foundation has been in existence, its endowment, which was originally at $100 million, has earned more than $125 million. So the foundation's endowment has effectively paid its way over these 14 years. There are many projects that the foundation has funded over the years, but I'd like to focus on two of them. One sort of that would affect the nonprofit sector, another one that affects the sector that I'm interested in and concerned about is the commercial fishing and seafood processing industries. The foundation, as I understand it, has spent the money or granted the money to wire every school in Alaska for the internet. And I know that's true here in Kodiak because I just spoke with the internet guru here at the school. So this was a great benefit that every child in every school in Alaska has appreciated. Additionally, although there have been some criticisms that some of the projects the foundation has funded have not borne fruit, others have been extraordinarily successful. And the one that I'm the most familiar with is the decanter centrifuge project that started here at the Fish Tech Center in Kodiak. Simply put, to process surimi, it's generally a very labor-intensive and technology-intensive process. This decanter centrifuge project used new technology, adapted existing technology, that cut several steps out of the surimi processing process, enabling the plants in Kodiak, Akutan, and Dutch Harbor to adapt their systems so that they could hire more Alaskans and keep Alaskans employed. So that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Mark, thank you. Is Betty Walters there, please?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Betty, go ahead. Go ahead with your testimony, Betty.
Well, Betty Walters, the superintendent on Kodiak Island. We have approximately 2,700 students around the island. Obviously, I'm going to address the education funding issue, and I would start with appreciating the fact that you have reinstated the transportation and the learning opportunity grants for us. The fact that the foundation formula is not inflation-proof hurts school districts across our state. I would encourage you to consider the bills which address the increase in the formula. Our borough, specifically, has been addressing our needs over the years, increasing their appropriation continually to push them to the cap. They can do no more for us. Now, with the changes in revenue sharing, they will not be able to help with education with those excessive cuts. Bonding is another issue that we face in our borough. As we look at reimbursement of those bonds, and as we are ready to bring bonds forward to our community, we would want to ensure the community members, the public, that they could be responsible for a greater cost than we are telling them at this time. Future bond issues will be drastic here in Kodiak if we do not have some guarantee that the financial responsibilities will be shared. Education on Kodiak Island will begin to look very different in the next school year as we face drastic cuts to our personnel and programs. I would just like to point out that the Alaska Association of Student Governments is having their spring leadership conference in Kodiak this weekend, and they're arriving as we speak. Here we have the future leaders of our state think about their education and the other students who don't have the opportunity to travel to Kodiak these days. Thank you very much for your time.
Betty, thank you very much. Is Larry Ladeau there?
Sort of. Yes, I am, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Larry Ledoux, and I'm an administrator with the school district, but I guess I'm here to speak as more of a citizen. I'd like to speak on behalf of the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation's role in enhancing science and technology education among our children. The ASTF has made a significant contribution to Alaska's future through grants made to local schools and organizations. In the past, you were considered educated if you earned a diploma, went to college, graduated from high school. But in the future, education, and even right now, is going to be determined on your ability to use technology. Indeed, the separation from those who can use technology and those who can't is growing all the time. It's a digital divide that may separate Alaskans far more than our geography. The Alaska Science and Technology Foundation has done several things that nobody else in the state has ever done. A previous person testimony mentioned the NetDay grants that wired schools throughout Alaska and required them to come to a certain standard to provide equity. It also sponsored a number of science and technology mini-grants throughout Alaska that have encouraged young people to pursue their dreams and interests in science and technology. A particular merit is a grant made to some of our village residents in Kodiak to develop the technology infrastructure in rural sites to try to find families who cannot afford a computer and to distribute surplus computers from nonprofits and governmental agencies to educate people and communities so that they could use technology. But most important, the grant was designed to develop an infrastructure in a community where computers could get repaired, where elders could get advice and in-home training, and where we could help develop the economic base of rural sites using technology. This grant has been very successful indeed. We just had approximately 10 people certified in A-plus certification while in high school, some of which have entered into professional jobs already. So I encourage you to take a good look at the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation. As we could, I think it's even more critical that we look at programs that contribute to the future of our kids and that we develop an infrastructure that's not just about roads and transportation, but it's about the kids that will be using technology to draw our very big state together into one place. And the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation has really done that, and it's done a lot, but I'll stop now. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Nancy Kemp. So Nancy Kemp in Kodiak.
Yes, hello. This is Nancy Kemp. I'm the Executive Director of the Kodiak Arts Council, and I'm here to ask you to restore funding to the community schools program. In Kodiak, it is only $10,000, and this $10,000 is a small amount that goes a very long way in our community. It allows the community organizations to use school facilities for the arts, recreation, community college classes such as English as a second language, and it's a very good use of the schools that would otherwise sit empty in a lot of cases in the evenings. So the use of these schools is an integral part of life in Kodiak, and I ask you to please reconsider that funding and restore the funds to the community schools program. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Betty O'Dell.
Written testimony. Thank you.
Okay. Mike Milligan.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I wanted to testify in regards to revenue production. I served elected office here in Kodiak for 7 years, and like many of you who served in municipal government before going to the legislature, I also had to do with revenue generation. And without sounding too aggressive, I wanted to share with you, Mr. Chairman, with a little concept of shock and awe, how I could keep ANWR off the national agenda for 5 years. I could go back to D.C. with a bucket full of Carhartt coats and some signs, put Carhartt coats on some protesters, stand between the Rayburn Building and the Capitol and the Hart Building and the Capitol with signs that would say, "Open ANWR now. Keep Alaska tax-free. Lowest gas tax in the country. Open ANWR now." And if we had that type of a protest back in D.C., you could forget ANWR discussion probably for the next decade. We need to generate revenues in this state. When I came here, I paid an income tax, and I was happy to pay it. I would have no trouble at all paying an income tax at the same time that I filed my application for my PFD. I want to pay more gas tax. It's embarrassing how little taxes we pay. I raised a kid who's living in Hawaii now who every year of his life got a PFD, and he thought that the purpose of government was to send him a check. We have to reverse this perversion that the government owes us stuff. We need to get back to the basic concept. You pay for the things you want, and you don't ask for the things you're unwilling to pay for. And I encourage you, Mr. Chairman, look seriously at some revenue production for this state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Is anyone left in Kodiak that wishes to testify?
There's no one else at this time.
Okay. Is anyone left at all in the teleconference from Kodiak? Bethel, Kotzebue, or Barrow?
Mr. Chairman, we do have one more person in Kodiak.
Okay.
Sorry.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Jerry Babbitt, and I'm here today to ask that you consider continuing funding and support for the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation. In the past,
yeah.
They have been be responsible for providing funding for some very important projects that have taken place here in Kodiak as well as for the state of Alaska. And I would just encourage you to consider continuing supporting the foundation.
Is that it, Jerry?
Yes. If you would like to ask me a question why I feel that, I could be more specific. But I could go on and on. About how important the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation is for particularly coastal communities in Alaska and how they have benefited the seafood industry. But I just suffice to say that I would encourage you to continue the support of the foundation.
Okay, very good. Jerry, I appreciate it. Representative Croft had about six questions for you, but he decided he'd wait for a little while. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. Is there anybody else in Kodiak?
Not at this time.
Not at this time. Well, I hope there's more people in Kodiak, but not that hasn't testified anyway. How about Bethel? Do we have any more people in Bethel that wish to testify? How about Kotzebue? How about Barrow? Okay. Doesn't seem like we have any more people that want to testify at this point in time. If we don't, then we will take a little recess until 2:30, where we'll deal with some of our off-net sites. So we stand in recess till 2:30. Thank you all for... Kodiak on! Is Kodiak on?
Can I tell you about it?
Kodiak, are you there? They were. You have Kodiak on? Kodiak, are you there?
Kodiak is here.
Oh, good. Kodiak, do you have another person?
One moment, please. She almost left.
We lost our camera for a second. We'll change it to so it's pointing towards the chairman. No. Right at you. Right at you. I'll take care of
it. Hey, I need to talk to you.
Chairman?
Yes.
Yes. Good afternoon. My name is Patricia Gibbs. I'm a resident here in Kodiak.
Patricia Gibbs, can you spell your last name, please?
Yes, sir. It's G-I-B-B-S.
Okay.
And I was just wanting to testify on the state operating budget, particularly the education funding. And I just would really encourage the Finance Committee to truly look at funding not only the foundation formula, but all the components, everything that's related to funding. My own children ride buses in Napa School, and it's my understanding that the governor's budget proposes a decrease in the amount of support for busing. We're also looking at, as a community, you know, on the debt reimbursement costs, those types of things. And it is just my hope that the operating budget for next year with respect to education would include all aspects of funding that relate to education, not just the foundation formula itself.
Did you?
Okay. Is that it, Patricia?
Yes, sir. Just that it would be my hope that as best we could, we would fully fund all components of education, and it'd be great to have that foundation formula increased at some point in the near future, including next year.
Okay, it's being talked about, Patricia. I appreciate your input and coming out and testifying today, and we'll certainly take your comments under consideration.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
You're welcome, and I'm sorry that we cut off a little early, but normally we had asked for a half hour ahead of time people sign in, but that's okay. I'm glad you were able to get on.
I greatly appreciate that opportunity. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you for coming out today. Is there anybody else in Kodiak?
No, Mr. Chairman, that's it.
Okay. Thank you very much, and we will be at recess now until 2:30. And a wonderful community called Yakutat. Carla Sheeve, are you there?
I am, sir. Thank you.
Please
to the members of the House Finance Committee, are you ready for me to begin, sir?
Yes, ma'am. Please begin your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I am Dr. Carla Sheeve, superintendent for the Yakutat School District, and I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to so many of us with the same concerns. Whether you are from a rural or an urban area with large or small schools, I'm sure that if not by now, you will at least by the end of the day feel like you've been listening to a broken record. Yakutat is facing the same problems districts across the state are facing. Our children are our state's greatest resource, and it is critical the state keeps its promise to increase educational funding to them. Public education is a sound investment, and I give my guarantee it will pay off. But you get what you pay for. High standards for all students takes money. At our superintendent's meeting last month, we went around the table to discuss what steps we've all been taking to meet the cuts in educational dollars. It was staggering to hear the numbers of teachers being cut, up to and as many as 56 in one district.